Hey everybody, welcome back to a off-season episode of the Husky Fan Podcast. I'm here as always with my bro, my main man. Brother, how you doing by the way? How you holding up these days?
It's a new year. A new year, a new start. Turning over a new leaf. Bigger and better things ahead, buddy. Gotta keep it positive. Look for the sun breaks. But I will say this, I'll throw a butt in there. Watching Alabama was slightly depressing because as much as our beloved Huskies have some talent, I mean, we're not even in the same universe as Alabama. And, you know, people are already making the argument that that's the best Bama team maybe ever under Saban. So the bar is high, but nothing wrong with attempting to reach that bar.
Right. Well, I think Alabama's dominance this year was partially due to the fact that they basically played it like a real season from the start. And there were other teams in the SEC, like LSU, had a shitload of opt-outs. They had really tight COVID restrictions in the off season, and that's why a lot of guys just opted out. And you know, it was just really scattered. I mean, you look at Ohio State; they basically played what, six games? It was like half a season. Yeah, I mean, we played four games at Arizona State. What did they play, three games? I mean, there were a handful of teams in our league that, including us, that missed like 3 weeks of a tiny season.
Yeah.
They played almost every game. It didn't, you know, maybe they were lying about COVID. I don't, I mean, the coach Saban had it once or twice.
Nobody else did.
Yeah, he had it, but nobody else on the team did. Like, I don't get that. So it just, they're obviously great and all, but I think it just wasn't a real season. I mean, there weren't that many great teams. And I think it's a function of it just kind of being
true, but I mean, that Bama team was, they looked really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, my takeaway is, their offense this year and LSU's offense last year, and, you know, not to get into some negatives with our program, but I know you're a big, you know, run the ball guy, but, I mean, how do you feel about Jimmy's really wanting to run the ball, yet if you look at the sport, the rules of the sport, the teams that are dominating, it's based on a elite passing offense?
Yeah, I think Coker has made this argument for quite some time, and I know he's been really hammering the drum in respects to percentage of, you know, run pass to run ratio. And it's definitely, I mean, the rules lean toward, you know, a passing game as well. You know, obviously everyone loves a physical run game. At least older fans do. Now, I mean, I don't know if that's the case now with the newer fan, but we've always appreciated a tough run game. But I think what we understand is that college football is revolved around an explosive, efficient offense. And defense is just frankly taking a back seat in the game. You know, you can run the damn ball. I think Washington has good running backs. Do we have a great running back? I mean, you and I believe Cam Davis has the potential to be a very talented, a very good running back for Washington. But, I mean, if we had an elite running back like Najee Harris, yeah, I'd say run the damn ball if you had someone, you know, with that ilk at the position, but they don't. And, you know, we've invested quite heavily in the wide receiver position. You know, Dylan Morris showed that he improved from, you know, game one to the last game in respect to his deep ball. And so obviously I think you have to use your strengths, and that's Cade Otton and the young receivers really came on. So in my opinion, maybe run the damn ball isn't necessarily the right message. I think maybe it's a way to convey a toughness and, you know, we want to bully the other team on the ground, so to speak. But in reality, is that the best strategy for the offense?
Yeah, I mean, for the talent that we have on the team, I mean, you talked about Dylan Morris. Obviously, you have Sam Huard coming in. I think we both think he's going to redshirt, even though it looks like he's going to be here in the spring. But, yeah, I mean, you look at – you have Cade Otton, who – God, that's just great, great news that he's coming back. Huge news, really. Jimmy, he's going to be an All-American next year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you have an All-American tight end. You have Puka Nacua, who's in the games that he's played, he's shown you a lot. I mean, he's an all-league caliber wide receiver. And then you have Jalen McMillan and Romo Dunze, who, I mean, they showed a lot. Who was it? Was it McMillan who he got hurt in the Stanford game, but it was Odunze who had quite a few receptions helping us come back. So, yeah, I mean, if you look at the makeup of the team, that's where the talent is. And if you look at the numbers during the season, I know I tweeted this out maybe a month ago or so, but if you look at our run statistics, we're like in the bottom third of the conference. And if you look at our passing numbers, like we're in the top three basically.
And I think there were many occasions, again, a shout out to Coker again, where, you know, it appeared that they were running against a stacked box continuously. And, you know, we saw the fullback dive make its resurgence. Seriously, like the amount of college football, I mean, I don't watch as much as I used to. I still get a decent amount. And I mean, I can't recall a fullback dive in many or any of the other games I've watched. I don't know if you can recall one.
No, I have not seen that. Not even in the NFL recently.
Yeah. So, I mean, John Don, let's see what happens. And I think, again, and we talked about it, the one plus of this abbreviated season or whatever you want to call it, gave him a lot of looks, gave him some game time experience. And I think obviously it gives them some tape to see how they want to approach next fall offensively. And then obviously defensive. Well, we'll stay on offense, but hopefully they'll make adjustments where it's needed and obviously get better. And they're going to have to get what's their quarterback situation now? They got Huard coming in, obviously Dylan Morris, and I think they have that transfer, Patrick O'Brien, who will probably never see the field.
From Colorado State.
Yeah, and I believe there was a two-star quarterback that committed as well, if I recall.
Maybe a like a walk-on type or a...
Yeah. I don't know if that he was given a scholarship. I just know there was a commitment of a quarterback. So, obviously, feels good to know that at least there'll be four quarterbacks on the roster. Looking like the two are only viable at this moment.
Well, I think the O'Brien guy might be okay as a backup.
Do you see him? I mean, assuming it's true that Sam is a lock to redshirt, then that would put O'Brien immediately at number two. I mean, he's a big kid. But again, I mean, what is this, his third school?
Yeah, I think you could be right. I mean, this guy was a blue chip recruit, a four-star coming out of high school. The number 209th best player in his class. Yeah, he's pretty old now, 2015. Yeah.
I mean, does he surprise and beat out Dylan Morris? I mean, it seems unlikely to me.
Yeah, I think if he or Sam Huard is better than Dylan Morris, that's a good sign. I mean, Dylan Morris,
O'Brien's only got 1 year, though, right?
I'm not sure. I'm not prepared to talk about Patrick O'Brien's eligibility. But
well, way to go on the prep, buddy. I'm kidding.
But I think we both are pretty optimistic on Dylan Morris. I mean, just a couple numbers. So PFF, I think, has him as, and not everybody agrees with their rankings, but they had him as the third best quarterback in the league based on grade. And in terms of QBR, I like the QBR stat because it's proprietary to ESPN, and it does a good job of mixing in the run with the pass. Now, if a guy is a good running quarterback but a shitty thrower, then sometimes the numbers can be deceiving. But nevertheless, Dylan Morris, there's like a raw QBR, and then there's one that's adjusted for the strength of schedule. And I think the adjusted one, he came in a 69, which is, I mean, that's pretty good for a first-year guy, a freshman. I mean, I think Browning was about a 60 in his true freshman year. And, you know, because I remember doing research on this when Browning was going into his sophomore year. A lot of first-year freshman quarterbacks, they tend to make a big jump from year one to year two. And if we're just looking at the scale, so he's a 69. If you're at a 90 or higher, you're basically a Heisman candidate. If you're at an 8, you know, 80 or really close to that, call it 75 to 80. You know, you're like all conference level. So if Dylan Morris can take what he did this year and build on it and improve, you know, he might be potentially an all-conference guy next year, as long as his, you know, his height doesn't limit him from showing more improvement. So, yeah, that's my take on Morris. I mean, do you agree or you feel differently?
No, I agree on all those things. From the stat perspective, you're much more dialed in than I am. I didn't know any of those numbers. I guess I could have looked them up. But I'll give him credit too, in the sense that I think he does provide some mobility, at least to allow him to extend plays, and then also, you know, scramble for a first down when needed. I think that he's shown some athleticism that maybe he hasn't gotten credit for. Obviously, he's not elite as a running quarterback, but I think he has just enough skill there to, you know, make plays. And he was really good, you know, rolling out of the pocket, moving him around, and throwing the ball. He seemed to have real comfort in that. And you just hope you see more of that, putting him in, you know, situations that speak to his strengths. It's always funny. You'd see guys. It's funny, too, like when we watch Browning play up-tempo, he was always better up-tempo, but they weren't consistent with it. You know, it's always, you always see quarterbacks excel in some, you know, part of the game, but then you only see a portion of it for a game where, like, why aren't you doing that the whole time? So hopefully they just, you know, really work toward, you know, what he's good at and make that part of the offense, make him excel where, you know, he does a good job. And I think he's displayed a lot of skills where he can build off those and get better.
But also, you got to like the intangibles.
Yeah. No, like you had mentioned, we saw a lot of times in situations where he didn't get rattled, where, you know, the panic button was hit with Eason and Browning and the double spin moves, the running backward stuff. I mean, we didn't see not even a speck of that out of Morris. You know, he would stand tall where he needed to when he didn't have options to move. He would stay in the pocket. We saw him, you know, make good, quick decisions to run for yardage, to keep his eyes downfield when it was chaos for him. Where, you know, again, we've just seen time and time again that those scenarios didn't go well for Eason and Browning. I mean, we watched 5 years of panic, frankly.
Browning taking like 30-yard sacks.
Yeah, and, you know, I know Browning had the 40-touchdown year, what have you. I mean, I'm not taking that away from him, but when things were tight and, you know, big plays were on the line in key situations, I mean, we'd see some fairly epic meltdowns. And I just didn't get that sense with Morris. And, it you know, he doesn't seem unfazed. He's got good pocket presence. Seems like he got good command of the huddle, which is important. So I hope to see Morris, just keep improving. And he's gonna, if Hubert does redshirt, obviously, Morris is gonna be in a hell of a competition, the next year. But I guess the focus is let's get through a regular season this year and worry about that later.
Right. Yeah, and I
So
think.
I feel good about the quarterback position. All in all, I like Morris. I think Husky fans will appreciate the guy.
Yeah, I think to me, just the biggest issue is will they try and. I mean, like you said, will they kind of go back to the drawing board and see how the game is trending and say, well, look, we have an All-American tight end, we have very good talent at wide receiver. You know, we have a quarterback who has shown us a lot already, who's going to improve. He's mobile. Why not focus on the pass game? And I mean, what a lot of guys I follow, like Sub K and Coker and Dennis, they're always people say, oh, they're always negative. Some people don't like that on Twitter, but they all pointed out, like, look, guys were our they really liked our passing game concepts. Like, guys were getting open. Clearly, in every game. It's just their concern was, like you stated earlier, forcing these running plays. Basically, it just seemed like we were trying to run between the tackles like constantly when there were already 7 or 8 guys in the box.
Yeah, I mean,
And then at the meantime, sorry to interrupt, the grade school rotation at running back. Like, okay, number one, now you go in first. Okay, next series you go in. Okay, number three, now it's your turn.
yeah, no, totally. And again, do we attribute that to the abbreviated season?
You could be right, actually.
But again, who knows? I could see Jimmy being like, I want to keep fresh legs. Let's rotate, all these guys and, keep fresh throughout the season. But we know the running back position is also a position of rhythm and getting a feel for the game. Those things are important. So we'll see. We'll see about that rotation next year. Because what did we hear over and over again that Cam Davis was the most talented running back on the team, and was it his blocking that didn't allow him to be on the field as much as we maybe expected him to be? Does he take a leap next year? Because if he's that good, let's see the guy touch the ball 15, 20 times, and he can catch the ball. So maybe those 20 touches involve 3 to 5 passes on top of the 15 run plays.
He's really good in the pass game. I mean,
Yeah.
he has good hands. He made, I think, 2 catches where the ball was not thrown like in the
Yep.
right. The placement by Morris wasn't that great.
Right.
So.
And look, and McGrew too. I think he's a competent running back. I like McGrew, and he is a guy that can catch and run too. And with his skill set, really, you could involve him in the passing game, maybe even more than the run game. In regards to formation and how you line him up. Again, I think he's another threat throwing the ball on top of all the other guys we talked about. And obviously, he's got great speed. He's got great vision. He's got quick feet. He's a guy you get in space that can do real damage. And so hopefully we see some of that. And
Yeah.
again, use the strengths of the guys you have. Don't just force an offense in your mind that you want to establish. If running the ball up the center's ass, 8 times a game, that's not exciting or doesn't create a lot of confidence in my mind.
Yeah, it the thing that worries me with Cam is, are they going to use him next year the way they should have used him this year? In other words, like next year they use him where maybe he gets like 10 carries a game. There's a couple games where he's the feature guy, but most of the time he's not. Maybe at the very end of the season he's the feature guy. Like, that's just my worry, is that this season like cost us a year in like the development of Cam, as well as maybe some other guys on the team.
I don't know. I don't see it that way. I think any experience is good experience. I don't know that he missed a ton of development. Obviously, like we said, we wanted to see more snaps, and you know, they should have played Cal. I mean, that was stupid. You know, obviously the Apple Cup was a clear cut deal. Obviously, would we like them to get two more games, one or two more games? Of course. I don't know if it took him backwards in any sense, but if he shows that he's so good, you can't keep him off the field, then you know, I think they'll make that decision.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, because it's not like the other guys are game breakers.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I think they feel like they owe these guys carries too. We're not in the war room, Chess. So we don't know exactly what they're thinking here. But it will definitely be curious to see what the rotation shakes out on a regular season, where you know the implications are high. You want to win a Pac-12 championship. I'm so sick of the whole playoff deal.
It's awful.
And, you know, now, I mean, people want, you know, 8 teams, 10 teams, whatever. I mean, could you imagine, though, like, seriously, like, Alabama playing the 8 seed?
Oh, it's just asinine.
Just blow off football.
Here's the worst thing with that, which people don't realize, and shout out to our metric superiority guy for always pointing this out. When you expand to 8 and you have 3 at-large spots, what that means is the teams that get those spots are like a 2 or 3 loss blue blood, basically.
Yep.
So it's like a team that was really good, that was supposed to be a national championship team at the beginning of the season. Oh, they might lose a game. They lose another game, and no big deal. They'll just say, whatever, you know, we'll have a high seed. We'll get into the playoff. We can still win it. And so that'll be, you know, the more you make it, the more you add to it, then it's just even going to concentrate power that much more. Okay, it might open it up to a few more teams, but it really is not going to do anything.
Need to see Notre Dame get spanked again? I mean, but seriously, like, okay, maybe you get an outlier upset, maybe, but I mean, for the most part, they always have the best teams.
Yeah, they do. No, every year they've picked the right teams. Except maybe this year, you could say. But every normal year, they've picked the right teams.
Yeah, I mean, that fifth team, there can be some argument, and then it's who's making the argument and what is it in for, you know, what's in it for them, you know, with Herb Street really banging the drum for Ohio State over Washington. Gee, I wonder why. I wonder why he wanted Ohio State. But usually, yeah, they get the top 4 teams correct. Let's get over this idea of expanding the playoffs. It's so old, man. How do we move past that idiot argument?
It's going to ruin the sport. I mean, look, going from going from 2 to 4 completely has led to all of these problems. And now it's like, oh, well, we need to make it even bigger. It's like, no, you should fucking downsize it.
And look, dude, like, look, let's say they did it in year one. There's a big upset. See,
yeah.
I told you, you know, everyone wants to see that big upset. But in reality, it's not going to be that way.
Look at the ratings. The ratings are down.
Yeah, they're down. They keep going. Yeah, they keep going down. There's a problem there too.
And one thing I tweeted this, but I just want to mention this. Like, another reason which sticks in my craw about the playoff is how we got, what's the right word? I mean, we got totally screwed in 2016. Like, Jimmy, the game wasn't on January 1st. First of all, second of all, it wasn't the last game of the, like, The playoffs should be those should be the last games of the season. And the third, we played in the fucking Peach Bowl, which is not even like a top It's not even like a top five bowl if you look at history. I mean, what kind of bullshit is that? Like, why couldn't have we have played like in the Sugar Bowl on January 1st, like prime time, and you know, there's one other playoff game and then the national championship. Like, that's the proper exposure we should have gotten. No, we had to have it on New Year's Eve, and then there's a shit ton of bowl games the day after. Remember, like, the Rose Bowl and USC won a great... Like, nobody fucking... Like, we didn't get anything out of that fucking playoff. It's for the program and the exposure. Like, we totally got fucked.
And look at what it's done to the talking heads. Week two of the season, it's already talking about the top four teams.
they're talking about the playoff like during all these other bowl games. The announcers are supposed to be calling these games. Oh, what about Texas A&M go to the playoff? Oh, there's a run by run by Iowa State for a first down. So back to the playoff. Blah 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 blah.
It's just painful. I mean, and ESPN, I mean, and the thing too, right? I mean, the pageantry of the game is not accentuated like it used to be. Everything's so commercialized. And not to go on a minor rant, but I will. But social media and the Twitter and the commit videos and, you know, all of these players on social media, it's just crazy. It's not, you know, it's like, in, you know, I know he got in a lot of trouble for it. Was it Booger talking about how so many players are just concerned about their brand and how they're viewed? You've got to, if you're Alabama, you're SEC, you know, you're one of those top guys. I mean, think of the attention you get from ESPN. There is pageantry within the fan base still in that portion of the country. There's just a lot of things that are attractive about, you know, if you're a top-end athlete being at those top schools. The fans care. You get the exposure. You get to build your personal brand. You get the fall. I mean, shit. Eason, I think the last time I looked at his Instagram, I mean, it was probably 4 or 5 months ago. I mean, I think he had 120,000, 130,000 followers. I think when he came to Washington, he had over 90,000 followers. I mean, this has gotten way bigger about playing college football. It's a whole nother animal now.
Yeah. And by the way, not to go off on a tangent, but by the way, our branding, I mean, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but losing Pete killed our brand. I mean, I don't blame it all on Jen Cohen. She's obviously severely underqualified.
Oh gosh.
For being athletic director, and our brand has taken a dump for almost 20 years. So that's not entirely their fault. But yeah, I mean, Peterson, once he left, our brand, you know, look at you just said it right there. Like, why would these guys, you know, why is JTT going to go to Alabama? You know, you just said it right there.
Dude, it's a no-brainer. He's going to play top competition. He's going to get the top coaches, top recognition, the exposure. He's going to get an opportunity to play in the title game. And did you see the Justin Glenn, like, social media marketing pictures and it where he's like doing the dubs out and he's got his hat on sideways and it's like that the lettering is this like this weird font and it's like a gray. I mean, it's just bad. It looked bad. It looked really bad. I mean, it looked like someone in the art department had like a side project or was an intern. Hey, can you whip up this picture so we can slap it up on Twitter and get some likes? I mean, it doesn't look like we have like a much of a strategy that's really strong. I mean, what is it that article about Kirby Smart and what was the dollar amount they put into the recruiting budget was insanity. Was it over $2 million? They had positions dedicated to social media and the way they bring in the recruits and woo them. I mean, it's a frickin' machine.
Yeah, and Alabama, I mean, yeah, Alabama and these schools, they have lots of, what do you call it? It's like when we hired Tedford, it's like a coach or a consultant. Like what? Yeah. Is it a consultant? I mean, Alabama just has tons of those types. I think there's like no limit to how many of those you can hire.
Oh, is there not?
I don't know. Maybe there is.
There might be, but I mean.
But yeah, I'm looking at this Justin Glenn thing, and no, I like Justin Glenn. I thank him.
I like Justin.
I thank him for all the work that he's done for the program. Yeah, but it's like a GIF or a video, and it's just like, what is this even conveying?
It's nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't show anything.
And can we point out, Jess, what did we say about Cohen when she got hired? I mean, we were not like. I mean, when you compare it to like Softy or some of these people in the media just being like, what a home run hire. This is huge for the UW. Like, she has got it. She's one of the best ADs in the country. I mean, like.
By the way, Jimmy, what a week for the Longhorns, man.
I know. I was waiting for that.
I was waiting till Friday to tweet that, but I guess people will be listening to this on Friday. But, back to Cohen. Because I wanted to talk about positives with the program, and we'll get to that. But anyway, you mentioned Cohen. Yeah, tell me something about Cohen.
Well, I mean, nothing that we hadn't. You know, we've been over. I mean, the thing is, we were ahead of the curve on it. Right now she's it's out in the open. I don't know how many defenders. I'm sure there's the ardent defenders, but it's certainly like it wasn't before. You know, we've let Softy know for many years about our displeasure, or at least our questioning.
I did today another time.
Oh, good.
But yeah, continue.
Because Softy, I mean, like we've talked about him being the voice of the Huskies. He has a huge platform. He is a diehard dog, obviously. But dude, I know he's got to stroke it because. You know, access is important in his industry, and you have to not always just put your whole foot in the water. You got to dip the toe, right? And you know, with like Willingham, he strung that to the very, very, very end. He finally knew, like he had to say it was time.
Profiles and courage.
Yeah, profiles and courage, exactly. You know, I just again, like when we started the podcast, like shit, we don't like what we see. We know Sark's a fraud, you know, and we had to no dissenting voices are out there. And, you know, we'll continue to speak. And, you know, if people are sick of the negativity, they don't want to hear it. I mean, if you want to be blind to certain things, like it's not all doom and gloom. Like you said, there's positives to touch upon, which we'll get to. But, you know, if we want to be an 8-win team and that we're fine with that, and, you know, then we don't critique anything. But if you want to be a consistent 10-win team contending for a Pac-12 title every year, then you're going to needle everything. You're going to nitpick everything, because to get at that point, like nothing can really, you know, no small details can go by if you want to have that consistency. If you want to be a 7-8 win type team, maybe that off year you get a 10 wins, maybe 11, then, you know, we just sit here and we pontificate and we fluff guys and we say everything's great. But that's not the reality. And at least the Husky fans that I know personally are diehard, and they like to see, you know, Washington be very successful. But, you know, they get a little whiny about, you know, being negative. But again, if you're going to be a top program, which, you know, we all expect them to be, you're going to have to point out the warts. You can't just gloss over them. And so, you know, if people are sick of Coker and Dennis pointing out negative things, like if we want to see offense we're not pleased about, then we don't nitpick it. And we just say, oh, that was fun. That was a good game. Well, let's get them next week. That's just not the diehard fan. That's not how you work.
Yeah, that's not what many people in this region grew up with. and by the way, Jimmy, you know, talking about Cohen, I think we were texting about this, and I want to do some off-season pods about this, but the football attendance it's gonna be shit this year. Like I think it's gonna be really bad, and they're gonna be depending on how the football team does. My optimism is we have a chance to be, you know, we have a chance to win a conference championship this year and probably the year after. But if we don't, I mean, if you see this team fall off to 7 wins, oof. I mean, attendance is going to be shit. It's going to be a real problem because COVID is going to have an impact with attendance everywhere. People are realizing, hey, I can save money. I can just watch it at home. Yeah. So you factor that in addition to the fact that attendance has already been slumping. I mean, Jimmy, we had more season ticket holders in 2008 than we do right now. And we just went through the last 5 years. By any metric you want to look at, we've been the best team in the West by any and every metric. Best team in the West. Seattle has been a growing city with a huge tech boom, tons of money coming in. And we had the success on the field. And there's fucking less season ticket holders than 2008. And you know what? A year from now, it's probably going to be a lot less.
That's a big problem. And that's a problem that Cohen has. That's priority number one for her.
Right. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not blaming it all on her, even though she's done nothing about it in the last 4 years, however long she's been here. You know, but when you listen to her talk, and you talk to some people, they're like, oh, well, it's going on nationally. It's, you know, this is happening. But still, you have to fucking figure it out. You have to do something about it. You know, we know that it's a lot harder. You know, we know there's technology today and you can watch the game at home. But you have to figure it out. There's solutions, okay? And I know that Peterson, he was kind of very insular, and he did a shitty job promoting the program, and you know, because Cohen is a nobody and wasn't going to tell him anything. You know, she didn't tell him like, hey, you need to be more promotional.
Right.
So part of it you could say ironically, and it's counterintuitive. But because of Peterson's personality, you know, that probably had a little bit to do with it. But nevertheless, you know, Jimmy is opening things up. I mean, you know, he's a fun, exciting guy. But that by itself is going to do nothing. Like the AD has to take charge and really figure out something, how to get interest back.
Well, and I think one thing is treating the fan with some respect. And I won't go on my parking lot rant, but like it worked. Like before they had all these parking attendants, like there was no problems pulling in. I tailgated consistently week in and week out from probably 1999 to I would say 2010. Every home game tailgate. And before all this staffing came in. And there was never a problem. You could carve out your own space. You weren't hassled. You know, I could tell you if I were still in Seattle, I would not tailgate, even though I love, like, tailgating to me is, I always looked forward to the Saturday, even though it was a shit ton of work and it required a lot of crap.
I love your tailgate nostalgia, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. You know, it was a gathering. You didn't think about anything. You were with your buddies and it was game day. And now you're negotiating these pricks that are total assholes, and I get it. Like, they're probably getting paid, you know, minimum wage to be out there, and you know, they don't want to take shit from someone in their frickin' Range Rover with their $25,000 trailer on the back, you know, bitching to them about, you know, their parking spot. I get it. But you know, it's just unfortunately the way you treat a fan matters, and if you continue to, you know, neglect that, eventually it's going to catch up. And I think some of their communication has been shitty, in respect to how they've treated fans, and obviously about renewing and tickets and all these things, especially around COVID. And I get it, like they need the money. But I think there's some work to be done in that realm in regards to how, you know, you talk to the fans, you know, and Tyrone was, you know, not really a a fan pleaser or a booster pleaser. So I mean, there was a lot of factors, but I'm just saying over the years that stuff will continue to, that'll erode your fan base.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but Cohen is clueless. She doesn't know what to do. They're like, they it seems like the culture in the AD is just the same as it was. They only care about money.
Yep.
They're going to be selling these fucking nosebleed seats for like $75 a game. You could go on StubHub like 30 minutes before the game and pay $40 and be like in the first 10 rows of the second deck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
No, I mean it's a real problem and it's real sad. I mean, how the branding, it's just not there. And like, I'm sorry, you know, people say I'm sexist. I'm not sexist. I mean, I hope
you are not.
Yeah, I'm not sexist. I, you know, if I'm sexist, let's fire Cohen and hire the most qualified woman we can find. I mean, it's great that she's a Husky fan, but I'd rather hire a competent person who hates the Huskies, you know, to run the department, to run it competently. It's like she's a Husky, like that's like giving her points with the Kim Grinnells and softies of the world. Like, fuck those guys. Okay, this is what she, like, she gave herself a 60, or I don't know if it was her or whoever, the Board of Regents or whoever those fuck sticks are. She got a 63% raise, Jimmy. Before the pandemic, okay? Yeah. She's giving 5% of it back this year, okay? Real charitable. In addition to that, look at her basketball hire, okay? It looked good the first 2 years. I mean, Jimmy, Mike Hopkins, right now the team is like 2008 football level. Just a complete fucking collapse. You look at
can you not just pull the plug?
You look at the women's team, it's also a disaster.
Yeah.
Jody Wynn has not been good.
No.
They've been really bad the last couple years. In addition to that, one of the most important hires she made, guy was a senior associate athletic director. He fucking sexually assaulted a volleyball player.
And they just and just swept it under the rug.
Yeah. So
bad. Real
and,
bad.
And look, I love Jimmy Lake. He was on our show. I give him praise to that, but who knows? Because given Cohen's track record and, you know, the way things are trending recruiting wise, this year is going to be really important, by the way, for Jimmy. But I mean, if we don't get some upside momentum on the field, then in 2 or 3 years, it's not going to look like it was a good hire. So for all those things, she got a 60% raise. Are you fucking kidding me?
Not good. Not good. I don't know what they based that on, but they had apparently there was something that we weren't privy to.
And you know, people who are new to the pod, you know, relatively new Husky fans in recent years, this is the kind of bullshit that we saw like 2002, 2003. That's why we're angry and we're pointing these things out, because we know that if shit, we know like what can lead to shit falling apart.
Yeah. Well,
now we could talk about some positives, but do you want to comment on anything I said? Because I want to get your thoughts.
No, I think it's on point. I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly. Our displeasure in some key areas that are, again, like super important when you want to keep, you know, your program getting better, right? Do you want to just stay middling? And like, we should point out, like, Peterson's run was phenomenal, right? We got to watch, you know, some really good teams and some good football. We had some obviously tough losses and bowl games. But some of my favorite Huskies were out of his era. He brought stability and, you know, respect to the program that, you know, that Willingham and Sark to shit all over. Yeah, no, I get that a lot of people were happy with Sark, which I don't actually get it, but I know, you know, to the casual fan and to the lame ass media, you know, this guy is like the golden boy. I can't figure out why he's so revered. I mean, it must have been Herb Street's comment. That's the only thing I can come back to, and that he coached under Carroll, right? I kind of just lost my train of thought. But the point being is that, you know, we had a great run with Peterson. He had amazing skill set, you know, coaching-wise and culture-wise. That's really hard to maintain. And obviously we're concerned with the leadership in place. I mean, we saw Cohen shell-shocked at the presser when he, you know, announced his retirement. I mean, you could tell, like, that was not a good thing for her, right? So maintaining a top-level program is not easy, and we're concerned.
Yes.
So, and I think all the points have been raised, and you look at the department as a whole, there's more problems beyond football, and football is the engine, and it's the most important to keep everything going.
Yeah, and I think, you know, getting into a few more, getting back to football, you know, yes, we're seeing some wide receiver, blue chip wide receivers transfer out, but Jimmy, we only have, according to Sub K, we only have 80 guys on scholarship now, and we have more tight ends and wide receivers, it looks like. So this roster management, I don't know what their answer is. And I mean, are we, like, I don't know if we're going to go and get guys in the transfer portal. I mean, look at what Utah's doing. They've added three blue chip guys through the transfer portal, you know, and we were in our recruiting class, you know, we weren't offering certain guys saying, oh, well, we're full, we're not taking any guys, you know, and suddenly you have all these guys transferring out this year. Like, I don't get the roster management. Like, that's a huge problem. You know, that, like, this year is it's an opportunity this offseason to really try and add some talent, to really beef up our chances of winning the conference. And I don't know if we're going to do it. I mean, are we just going to, you know, so we're five guys short now, five scholars short now, we're just going to give five scholarships to five walk-ons? I mean, does a championship program do that? Fuck no.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
Now, with that said, I think, you know, I think some positives, I think on the field with the team, Jimmy has established a really good culture, like a, you know, a hungry culture. He's not kind of neutering guys like Pete sort of did the last couple years. You know, you don't see guys playing like they're afraid to make a mistake.
Yep.
You know,
tight.
Yeah, not playing tight. It's a mentally tougher team that showed itself to be kind of clutch in this very short season. I mean, there's good camaraderie. Obviously, you have a lot of guys who could have gone to the draft who came back for their senior year. I mean, Kate Otten, Jackson Kirkland, Ryan Bowman, you know, the first two especially. So I think that speaks real positively to Jimmy's culture. Getting, because guys, if they really, you know, they come back when they really like the team. If they don't like the team and they don't like what's going on, they don't like the coach, you know, they tend to leave. So I think.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
So I think. You know, and Urban Meyer always says that culture is the most important thing. Oh, for him, it's, you know, overlooking when your players commit a bunch of crimes. That's also important. But culture is the number one thing, and Jimmy is doing really well. You know, I think we're reverting more to like what we had in 2016. You know, that kind of culture. You had a good mix of guys, and you had a lot of alphas or guys with an alpha attitude. So that's a real positive, I think. Now but then you have, you know, how good of a coach is Jimmy Lake and how is he recruiting? I mean, so far those things, I mean, he's obviously unproven, but you know, it's wouldn't be a surprise if those are big drop-offs from Peterson, to be honest. I mean, we saw it in the first recruiting class. I mean, it was almost a total disaster. So we'll see if he can bounce back this year, and we'll see if, you know, how the coaching goes this season. But I think, you know, we have a lot of talent on the team, and the culture is there. So then now we got to see it on the field. We really have to make it a big season. And by the way, Jimmy, the schedule's a joke. I mean, look at our road schedule. Are you aware of this? Our conference road schedule.
Run it down.
Okay, so we do have to play Michigan. Now, yeah. I think we have the Apple Cup is, so that's at home. So we have four conference road games. Okay, we have Arizona, Colorado, Oregon State, and then Stanford, who's lost a bunch of players. So three of those four road games are teams we have significantly more talent than. So if I'm Cohen in the AD, I'm making damn sure that home, we have Oregon at home. It's going to be a huge game for Jimmy and the program's future. Arizona State's also at home. You know, they're going to be a contender. UCLA is probably going to be halfway decent. No USC, no Utah. But I mean, given that schedule.
Do you face Garbers? Oh, does Garbers have to sit out, though?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
But look, looking at that schedule, there is, I mean, a very good team should be 8-1 in conference. That's the easiest conference schedule we've ever had.
And Chess, look, the offense will need to perform, right? Because I as much as I like the defense, they are losing more talent and they have deficiency at safety and linebacker. It's going to be important for this offense to be really good. I think the defense will be good. There's talent, obviously. We saw a lot of flashes from guys, but, you know, losing Molden, that's a huge loss.
Right.
And the guy was, you know, arguably the best player in the Pac-12. At least defensively. You know, it's going to be important for this offense to be really good next year. Because I think, you know, we're gonna struggle a little bit on defense. I do think that.
Yeah, I think with the defense, we need to see development at inside linebacker as well as safety. I think at inside linebacker, I mean Danny Hammer, Calvert, those guys.
I feel like we have potential linebacker. I'm really concerned about safety.
So you're just with Alex Cook, Cam Williams, Asa Turner. Yeah, Asa Turner was kind of disappointing. I mean,
I'm not ready to give up on him, but I feel like I'm more. I feel if I were to compare the two positions, I have more concern at safety. I mean, Cam Williams, did he even play? I don't even remember him being out there. Got a little bit of playing time, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, we're unproven at corner outside of McDuffie and Kyler Gordon, who are both really good. And I think Kyler Gordon, I think he played. They moved him to safety at one point. So
I think he did play some.
So who? You know, Keith Taylor, I'm surprised he left, although he was a senior. I mean,
yeah, but his tangibles and coming out of that program, and Jimmy's going to have his back. I think he'll find a place.
But I think Dom Hampton, that's a guy we'd love to see really step up. I mean,
McDuffie could be an All-American. I mean, there's
wait, Dom Hampton or Kyler?
No, McDuffie.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think McDuffie has an opportunity to be an All-American next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, well, ZTF is going to be a preseason All-American.
Yeah.
So I wonder how the strength is going to be the pass rush and outside linebackers. So I really wonder how much that can cover up for potential weakness at safety.
Yeah.
I mean, because ZTF, I mean, he was behind Latu. So you have Latu, ZTF, I mean, Smalls coming on, Ryan Bowman, although, you know, I kind of believe the Sub-K and Dennis talk on him. They don't like him because he's a try-hard white guy. But look, PFF had him as the third best guy on our defense before he got out because of COVID, and he's a good player. And
yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, no, I'm a fan.
So that no, I agree with I'm might be a little more optimistic on the defense just because I'm hoping we can see one or two guys in the secondary like kind of flash.
Yeah, I guess from what we saw though, from some of the run defense in this abbreviated season, just
right.
Hopefully that's shored up, right?
Well, yeah, a lot of guys, including the young D linemen, I mean, aside from Thule and Sam Taimani, the other guys, they need to take a leap.
Yeah, no question.
And I think hopefully with the outside linebackers, we'll just have, excuse me, we could just have an insane pass rush. Like that's, if you're thinking what's the realistic best case scenario for the defense, then it would be we just have this insane pass rush.
I hope to see it. Yeah, I think there's a positives for the defense. I just think it's going to – I think early on, you know, the offense is going to have to be ready to go.
It also comes back to coaching and philosophy, because if Jimmy wants to win these games 28-24 – like you're, I mean, we don't want to neuter the offense. You know, we have the offense and the guys where we could score 40 points a game. I mean, it's better to win games 41-28 than try and win every game 27-24 or 27-21.
Quarter like Pete Carroll.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm with you. So.
All right, we have a couple questions. So
yeah, let's knock them out.
I know. We both said we were going to make this a short one.
Yeah.
Privately. But, all right, can we impeach Jen Cohen? She should be.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in full agreement. Get rid of her.
Yeah. Well, can or will John Don adjust the offense to add more spread to his tight formation, run the damn ball sets? I think you were saying they probably, I mean, offseason, they'll probably look at everything.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I really hope they make the adjustment. But I don't know. I don't know anything about this guy.
Yeah.
We'll get a full, hopefully, God willing, we get a full regular season to flesh this out.
We will. The virus is going to burn itself out.
Well, don't worry, buddy. The media has super COVID on its heels. So,
yeah, that new variation,
the new variant, the B117. Yep. So, I'm not holding my breath, but I'm with you. I feel like, you know, we hopefully will turn the corner at least by next fall. Please just give us a regular season of football. Look, if I had to quarantine through, you know, August 31st, knowing there'd be a full regular season ahead, I'd do it.
This is really tough. I mean, I'm a home person, so I don't mind, but like it's starting to get very tough.
It's not ideal. Yeah, it's it's not, no one's a fan. People are burned out. It's time to turn the page on this. But if I could gut it out if it meant a regular, normal football season, I'd sacrifice.
Well, speaking of turning the page, which assistant will be the first to be fired? I'm going to go with Bob Gregory.
Yeah, I think it's just, it's too obvious, right? I mean, it's gotten to a point where it's just, I mean, again, special teams was not great. I don't know how much you can put on him about Henry, but Henry has appeared to take a little bit of a step back. And then obviously recruiting at linebacker and the position as a whole has just not been good. But we see some of these guys just keep going, you know, just keep getting by. But you have to think so.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Gregory or Boner. Keith Bonifa.
Yeah, I think those are safe bets.
Next question. How long before we are back to 7 wins year after year? My prediction would be the year after next year.
Yeah.
Meaning 2023.
And you just, it's just incomprehensible that you could have let that happen when you, from the outside looking in, getting a potential generational quarterback. It's unacceptable if that comes to light, but it's possible.
Yeah. Why do we think pro-style offense will net us offensive skill recruits when Oklahoma and Ohio State run nothing close and steal all those recruits? Same thought process that thinks more tight ends means a better running game?
Ask me the question again.
It's kind of a long question. Why do we think pro-style offense will net us offensive skill recruits when Oklahoma and Ohio State, they run different things and they're stealing those recruits?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we talked about at the beginning, there's just so much more to college football now than this idea of like running the pro style offense. I mean, if you're a kid, like let's say you're borderline, like if you're real with yourself, like your chances of making it to the NFL are not very high unless you're just the elite. Or, you know, maybe you're a guy who just develops, but you could have your best shot of exposure, building your brand, making connections. Like, who knows what you can do with yourself in this crazy-ass world where these dipshits, excuse me, that live in these – and I'm not saying college football. I'm just saying, like, this culture of, like, these influencer houses. I don't know if you're aware of this, but – where, you know, these quasi celebs from reality television live in all these homes and do these stupid ass videos and people watch this shit. Like I'm saying, like these guys don't necessarily have the NFL as their potential top goal because again, like you're going to look at what does this program offer me as a whole? What can I do with this, hopefully 4-year scholarship at a top school. You could turn that thing into anything. And like the Pac-12 has problems. Like if you're deciding between the Pac-12 and the SEC, the Big Ten to a degree, I mean, the Pac-12's got so many problems and your exposure. And I think your experience is going to be better. Right now, that's what I think. Now, I could be way off base, but when you look at the youth and their absolute, unwavering focus on these social media platforms, I just think they're thinking about way more things than whether they run a pro-style offense or, you want to score touchdowns, you can get on ESPN in college, right?
It's a lot more simple than that. And it's getting back. I mean, you're talking about the larger issue, but let me simplify it. You're talking about how these players, they want to build their own brand. And Washington is not a strong brand. It's been a weak brand for a long time. And Peterson temporarily elevated it. Even though his lack of promotion kind of hurt it, he gave the brand a lot of credibility. Yeah. And when he left... As soon as he left, our recruiting fucking tanked. And that's because our brand took a huge dump when he left. And look, go back to the question, think about, I mean, Georgia, they're like a destroyer of player talent. Like their tight ends, they don't barely even use their tight ends. And there was that guy who, he was from NorCal, who decided to go to Georgia instead of us. In recent years, we've been, USC has gotten tight ends over us. When it's like, hello, we use the tight end a lot. USC doesn't even use a tight end. Yet there's tight ends going to USC. Like, so it doesn't, I think it comes down to just branding. And like you were saying before, I mean, they want to be on TV. They want to play for a big time school. And look, to be honest, 2 years ago, like, we could be viewed as a big-time school. You know, two championships in the last 3 years, playoff, recruiting a lot better, Hall of Fame coach, a great history. We were well, a big that's why we've stockpiled a lot of talent in recent years.
Now they have Pac-12 After Dark. Oh, hey kids, you get to be on a game that's going to play at midnight, 11 o'clock, 11:30 on the East Coast. Nobody sees you play Pac-12 After Dark. And in the sense of the brand hit, you and I like Jimmy Lake. A lot of fans that are, you know, aware of him and what he's brought to Washington like him. But from a national standpoint, you know, he was obviously looked at as an up-and-comer, but are players aware of Jimmy Lake across the country? Like, Peterson had a lot of, you know, name recognition because of his success at Boise State. He had big wins. You know, he was beat Oklahoma when they had Adrian Peterson.
He beat Georgia.
Yeah, and he had what was the third winningest coach. I mean, he had a lot. You know, his resume was packed full.
I mean, he had two. He had two teams that were like top six metrics teams. Like two, he had one team that would have made the playoff, and another one that would have come really close if there was a playoff back in the day.
And he was doing it at Boise State, right?
Yeah.
he wasn't getting the top guys, and I think he liked that. Right? He liked that. So he came with a lot, you know, a big resume, recognition. And like I said, Jimmy doesn't come with that resume. But we like, all right, if you're in that circle, you're a Husky fan, you've watched his defenses, you've seen his energy, like, you know, I like that hire. But that doesn't necessarily translate to a national perspective or, you know, even west of the Mississippi as to what Jimmy Lake offers. That, you know, he knows for his DBU and his secondary recruiting, which that has taken a hit.
That's taken a massive shit.
So, you know, riddle me that one. I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big concern because the DB recruiting peaked even before Peterson quit. And look, I mean, the recruits that we're getting, I mean, they're fine, and you know, some of them will develop into NFL players, but it's just, you know, you have to look at the numbers and you look at the odds. And, you know, we're not getting a lot of the guys that we made, you know, that we wanted, like first and second.
Right.
And look, it's like you were saying before. I mean, look, you can develop your way to, you know, maybe occasionally you can have like a 10 or 11 win season with development. But it's really hard to be a consistent contender just developing guys. I mean, you look at a team like Utah, like they've probably been the best in development over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, we're probably number two, and they're losing in-state guys. But you know, you look at the last couple of years. I mean, they got beaten badly by Oregon, the championship game. They got beaten by us, even though, you know, they gave us a really good fight. And they know that they need to get better players. That's why they're the last couple of years they've been trying to load up with the transfer portal. You know, because they know like development will only go so far. And yeah, so
I mean, JTT, you know, we'll end it with this, but in the sense of like we had touched upon, if you're evaluating or a Mecca, you're evaluating Washington versus Ohio State or JTT with Alabama or whatever, and you get the old piece of paper out and you do the pros and cons line of each program. And, you know, if you're an Emeka talent, JTT talent, like NFL is where you're going to want to go, right? I mean, it's not that difficult a decision now, especially the way, like, how everything's – the landscape – it's like Washington is not the Washington of old that we all know, right? The older fans, like, it's been talked about. I mean, it just does not have the same lore.
But Jimmy, even the Washington of, like, 18 months ago –
what's that now?
But I'm saying you're saying it's not the Washington of old, but I'm saying it's not the Washington of even like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Because I'm just saying like the brand, the Washington brand, you know, coming into the 2019 season was, it was fairly high. But I'm just saying we had that bad season. You know, Peterson kind of checked out mentally, you know, and then he quits and our brand recognition takes a big dump. And so it's completely different than a couple years ago. But no, I agree with you. You make the checklist and, you know, Peterson was a huge selling factor for a lot of these guys. And he, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Fame college coach and he's not. You know, he was a closer.
He was an equalizer. I mean, he didn't get Sorrell. Looking back, that's not the biggest loss in the world. Obviously, would have liked to have him. But yeah, I mean, he was an equalizer in the sense that, you know, he would balance out that list. Now that list is not nearly as strong. And I'm in getting just to the more woes of the Pac-12 conference too. Is not going to help. I mean, if you're recruiting from another conference against the Pac-12, like, are you not going to mention the chaos and the just pure, you know, idiocy running the conference? Like, you're going to point every one of those problems out. Hey, you want to play at 7:45 at night? I mean, Like, look, hey, kid, we're going to be playing primetime. You're going to be on ESPN. It's going to be the game of the week. You know, you'll be the featured game off the, you know, like, it's just endless. And, like, granted, Washington has a great business school. They got, you know, great pro school, you know, departments and all those things. But at the end of the day, it's just our story is just not as strong right now. Especially with the top guys that are looking at the blue bloods.
Yeah. Well, and that's why this season, it's critical for our future over the next couple of years, because we have the talent to do a lot of damage and achieve some things this year.
If you win the Pac-12 this year, that's
fucking huge.
Huge. It'd be outstanding, and it would, you know, obviously lend a lot of credibility to Lake as well.
Massive.
That's going to raise eyebrows for sure. And you got to get the fans back in the stadium, right? That's the other thing, right? Like, you're going to go play in front of 107,000 people at Ohio State. Alabama is going to be packed house every, you know. Michigan, all these schools, they're going to have packed houses. And Washington does not have a packed house. That has to get better. Fans have to go back.
The AD needs...
But it's concerning. Like, the fan situation in the stadium is concerning, man. You know how annoying it is going to the games and you just see, like, all those empty sections? It's just, ugh. It's awful. The student sections is packed out maybe twice a year.
They got to give free tickets to the students.
Dude, yeah, don't try and, you know, do those giveaways. Do them every freaking quarter. I know they make it to the third, but do it twice at the third quarter. You know, they hand out some pretty damn good gifts. And then if it's, you know, a good game, you know, they'll probably stick around for it.
But you know the school would rather maximize money than maximize fan attendance.
That's right. That's true. And granted, like, do we want to coerce the student fans to be in there? No. I want them to be in there because they want to, you know, support the team and be there to watch them win.
Okay.
It's about maximizing. And we've heard the rumblings about it. It's just strictly about money and that's it.
Okay, brother, two quick questions.
All right.
Did DDY and Coker storm the Capitol with the rest of Antifa? Also, what do we have to do to make our offense more attractive to wide receivers? I think we just answered it. You know, we need more fans. We need the brand to be better. You know, we need to win on the field this year.
Innovative offense.
Yeah.
Yes, Coker and Dennis were there.
Yeah, they were actually paid by George Soros to be there.
They were.
That's what I heard.
It's true.
Okay, last question. is Mike Hopkins to Keith Gilbertson of basketball. Terrible season, terrible recruiting, so no talent for the next coach.
Can't you just stop the bleeding? I mean, he's got to go.
Yeah, I don't think so, because look, Hopkins, he actually won a conference title. His first 2 years were good, and then his recruiting class was really good, and it's just been a total dump since that point. So you can't say he's Gilby, because Gilby was horrible. Like, Gilby immediately took a 9 or 10 win team and went 6-6 with it. And then he went 1-10 the next year, which was really the first 0-12.
Yeah. Oh, some dark days. The dark decade, man. We lived through a dark decade. And I spent all those years tailgating through the worst decade of Husky football.
Me too, brother. Me too.
But, you know, we had some great runs in the 90s, and obviously 2001 was great. That was a great trip down to Pasadena. So, but yeah, we put a lot of time and energy in the dark decade. Traveled a lot of games too. Saw a lot of losses on the road. Oh, man.
Like the Colorado game you went to in 2019 and the Stanford game that I went to as well.
Oh, don't remind me. Horrendous.
We have to leave on a high note. What would that be?
2020 is over. New year, new beginnings. You know, we got new unis. We got the swoosh off there. Adidas needs to work on their wardrobe a little bit. But high note is, you know, we got some things to look forward to. We got the top quarterback coming in.
Got Cade Otton coming back.
Got Cade coming back. Kirkland coming back. So there's certainly some excitement for sure.
All right, brother. Good work. All right. We got to close this thing down because we went much longer than we were planning.
Yeah, it's I'm going to pay for this. All right. Well, on that note, let's close it down.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hopefully you recorded it.
I did.
Okay.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.